Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan, South Sudan, and East Africa on this Thursday, June 27, 2024. South Sudan opposition groups meeting in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, disagree on who should be on the negotiation table.
The self-serving narratives that they have given to the mediators is that the peace process belongs to the three that I have mentioned. And that is the message that has been communicated to us by them and also by the mediators.
And protests against Kenyan President William Ruto continues across Kenya.
People are dressing in white in solidarity with the families of the ones who lost their friends and brothers and sisters. The main aim is to go to State House. We are peaceful because we are not armed in any way.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Opposition holdout groups meeting in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, have disagreed on who should be at the negotiations venue. Sunday Dijon, leader of the South Sudan United Front Progressive, says he was kicked out of the talks by the mediators.
The process itself has been owned by the three, General Paul Malong, Pagana Mwom, and Stephen Boyd.
Why would they own a process that is for everybody?
Well, the self-serving narratives that they have given to the mediators is that the peace process belongs to the three that I have mentioned. And that is the message that has been communicated to us by them and also by the mediators. And we were surplus to requirements according to their view. And after we have seen this, we made it clear that we are South Sudanese and we are supposed to be part of the process as we started together. But eventually, they threatened the mediators that should these other political organizations be kept at this peace venue, then we should be given tickets to fly away.
How many groups been told not to be part of the process?
There are four groups that were initially invited, but that have been finally asked to, some have been asked to leave, and others are being kept there as appendages. They do not have any role to play significantly. And these four groups are the UDRM that has already left, and also the South Sudan United Front Progressive that I am heading, that is not being given the chance to participate, and that is not being sent away. It's just a matter of come tomorrow and move on like that. And also there is the PRM, Kit Guam, under General Larata. All these political organizations have been phased out on request of General Malong, jointly with Pagan, and they are citing reasons that are not necessarily to be communicated in the media. As well, the peace process, according to them, was actually engineered by their friends inside Juba. And so since they are not our friends, we do not have to participate in it.
They are people who promoted themselves to major generals, and they are just on paper. They don't have any following on the ground. They even don't have troops. They were lucky to be invited at the talk. What are you telling me about?
Those people that have been invited there to the talks are the conformists. They actually have talked nicely to the three bosses that I have mentioned, and they are being allowed to be there. As who are championing for the change in the country, basically, on matters of constitution, will delay the process, and so we must not be part of it.
There are various groups in South Sudan. People would call these groups rebel groups, but in actual sense, it's only one person who has run out of Juba and is in Nairobi sending statements on a headed paper calling themselves commander-in-chief of this group and that group, when in actual fact they don't even have any troops on the ground. How would you negotiate with somebody like that? That person could be negotiating his ways to go back to Juba and be in a government.
Well, the criteria of selection is not known to us. From the genesis of the process, we all knew that it was a communication between the two principals. Basically, President Salva Kiir Mayardit of South Sudan writing to his counterpart in Kenya, His Excellency William Samoei Ruto. And the peace process later on was made known to the public that there will be an initiative that will encompass SOMA and the other groups, which we embrace because we need peace for our country, and we also need the opportunity to talk on the issues of constitution, as that one has been an ingredient that is lacking in the country, so that it can kick off like the rest of our rivals in the region. But unfortunately, the mediators succumbed to the self-serving narratives of Gerald Malung, Pagan, and Boy Rolnyang, who claims to have the forces and who claims to be the biggest threat in the country and who claims to own the process itself. And for that reason, we have to talk to South Sudanese. To my ini in Kiswahili means hope, but there is no hope in it for South Sudanese except for the people that I have mentioned and those that they have brought on the table. Those that have just announced the other day that they have become rebel faction and that they have forces, they embrace them maybe thinking that they would become a leverage in some ways, but they do not know this reality on the ground, certain people are just self-seeking and they don't have forces.
Sandy, let's talk about forces. When you broke away from General Paul Malong, you formed your own group called the South Sudan United Progressive, right?
Front Progressive, yes.
South Sudan United Front Progressive. How many soldiers do you have?
Yes. Well, I am not a violent organization. From the time I broke away from General Malong, I have never spoken that I will shoot here or there because I have not amassed the soldiers. Soldiers being amassed means violence, and I don't subscribe to it. Yeah, I'm saying it is the group of young people and the politicians that I am with, that I am leading. And our call is that we need South Sudan to be reinvigorated in a manner that will not kill the lives but make people prosperous. And that is through the Constitution, basically, because Constitution will guarantee the rights of everyone.
That's Sandy Dijon, leader of the South Sudan United Front Progressive. He was speaking to me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. This program reached out to Pagan Amun, the leader of the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, for comments on Sunday's remarks, but he did not return our calls. Kenyan police today have been chasing with protesters in Nairobi as they return to the streets to oppose a contentious finance bill. Some protesters say they also want to honor more than 20 demonstrators killed when police fired on crowds on Tuesday when they stormed Parliament and set part of the complex on fire. Protests today come even though President William Ruto has said he would not sign the finance legislation, which would have imposed several new taxes. He also said he wanted to confer with the activists and community leaders to find ways to address the country's economic situation and high debt load. Today, many protesters say they wanted to march to the State House because they don't trust Ruto. Police fired tear gas and used water cannon to block them. My colleague Yehes Wihub spoke to journalist Ruben Chama in Nairobi on the latest situation.
In the capital of Nairobi here, police have been trying to repulse groups of protesters who've been trying to make their way to the city center to continue with the protest. In Nairobi, generally, there is very heavy police presence. A lot of the protesters who have been trying to make their way to the Nairobi's business district have been blocked because many of the access routes have actually been blocked by anti-riot police. So the situation in the city is that the military has also been patrolling the streets of the city center, although there haven't been any skirmishes with the military, but we have seen quite a number of police lobbing tear gas canisters to small groups of protesters who've been trying to make their way to the city center. I should also add that all the entrances to the State House are blocked by heavy police presence, so it's really difficult any protesters will manage to go that route.
And Ruben, hundreds of protesters are also, according to reports, are gathering in the port city of Mombasa and in the western city of Kisumu. It's not only Nairobi.
Yes, indeed. We've seen protests also happening in many other towns across the country. There has been protests in Mombasa, which is the coastal city of Mombasa. We've also seen protesters in western part of Kenya, Kisumu, towns of Migori. There were reports that some protesters were shot, but those reports are yet to be confirmed. So the protests seem to be happening not only in Nairobi, but also in many parts of the country. But I have to say that since the president yesterday announced that he had decided to reject the contentious legislation, we've seen a bit of turn down. Some of the protesters have already been taking to their social media platforms and saying that they are open for discussion, and some have already said that they are not going to take part in today's demonstration. So I guess that's why we are not seeing a heavy presence of protesters in the capital.
Ruto is grappling with the most serious crisis of his two-year-old presidency, as the youth-led protest movement has grown rapidly from online condemnations of the tax hikes into mass rallies demanding a political overhaul.
Yes, definitely. I think this kind of protest, I would say they have been unprecedented because, one, it is a group of young people called the Gen Zs who've been calling out politicians and also demanding accountability from the government. And it remains to be seen what the president will do moving forward. Yesterday, he mentioned in the speech that he's willing to engage with the young people, and also he announced that he would like to see a kind of a multi-stakeholders discussion opened. So I guess these demonstrators have really put the administration on its toes. So we wait to see probably what are the next steps moving forward.
As far as the casualties are concerned, what are the numbers so far?
The number of deaths stand at 23, but also several hundred have been wounded in this protest.
That was Ruben Chama, our reporter in Nairobi, speaking with my colleague Yehes Wihub. Still in Kenya, reporter James Shimanyola has been speaking with people in Nairobi about the protests and what has been happening in Kenya over the past few days. Isaac Ogutu is one of the protesters.
The protests today are continuing because of the extrajudicial killing that happened during our Tuesday peaceful protest. Nine of our members who are peacefully demonstrating lost their lives. So today, people are dressing in white in solidarity with the families of the ones who lost their friends and brothers and sisters. The main aim is to go to State House. We are peaceful because we are not armed in any way. We are just dressed in white and a handkerchief, and we have a flag resembling peace.
Kezia Waitetu sells eggs, chickens, and cereal. She thinks the protesters should be patient and not protest right now.
Young people should stop protesting and wait for the bill to be defeated. We are not in good state because everybody is even fearing and wondering what is going to happen next. Because when the military are in town, it doesn't look good because military come when there is big problem.
Business person Kambua Wambua is concerned about how the protests will affect other people.
I think the best thing is for the people to stop that thing with immediate effect, because if they demonstrate, all people like me will be affected. They demand their rights, but that will take time.
For more on the protests and political developments in Kenya, please check out voaafrica.com. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, fuel scarcity hits Yambio Town. Find out why after the break. Listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Scarcity of fuel in the Western Equatorial State capital Yambio has forced some taxi operators, known as Boda Boda, to park their motorbikes, and that means many people must walk to work. A liter of petrol now costs 15,000 South Sudanese pounds. For VOA News, Matia Samuel Timoteo reports from Yambio.
Petrol station in the Western Equatorial State are dried, and residents of Yambio town are now depending on the black market for supplies of diesel and petrol. Earlier this month, two oil companies in collaboration with South Sudan's national ministries of finance, trade and industry imported truckloads of diesel and petrol to help push down prices of fuel across the country. Bosu Semeng, the manager of Ansa petrol station in Yambio, says they state government is to blame for the fuel increase across Yambio town.
The revenue takes from us 5%, but later on we receive a degree, they increase from 5% to 10%. And from this 10%, with this nowadays a situation of inflation of money, we will not be able to operate on that that figure. Last month, we wrote our complaint and we submitted to the authority concerned.
Haim Isaiah Paul, the State Minister of Trade and Industry, says the fuel crisis in Yambio is just a temporary issue and the state government is working hard to solve it. When the State Ministry of Trade and Industry got the complaint from traders, we immediately took steps on how the fuel crisis can be addressed. We are now trying to see how the taxes can be reduced on the fuel dealers in Western Equatoria State. The problem is already solved. In the next 48 hours, there will be enough fuel in Yambio and all the counties. But Busu says they are waiting for the response from the state government.
All the stations in Yambio also facing the same problem. We are still looking forward for the government and the state to consider our problem so that we can go ahead to supply more fuel. It's good that the tax of the fuel has to come down so that the poor people on the ground can be able to buy a liter. If we just increasing the price, this is affecting our people, not the government.
David Bako, a resident of Yambio town, says the fuel crisis has affected him, adding that he now walks to his place of work after parking his motorbike.
To use border too is very expensive. Now I have to walk 45 minutes from my home to the place of work, back and forth, and I'm getting to 60. If it is affecting me so much like this, what about the ordinary people and the people who are far away from the city? That's how it affects us here.
Simon Richard, a motorbike taxi operator locally known as Boda Boda, says the shortage of fuel has affected their business. He says he has lost most of his customers because of the high fuel prices. We are really very sad because our customers are no longer like how they used to be. What is affecting us is the fuel price, which is very expensive. When we buy it like that, for a customer to take Boda for 3,000 or 4,000 South Sudanese pounds is very difficult, which has affected us because it's our way of survival on how our children can eat food. But with this, it has crippled our business. The fuel shortage in Yambio has hit business communities and state government workers. For VOA News, I am Matia Samuel Timoteo in Yambio, Western Equatorial State.
From Yambio, we move to Malakal, where some children in Upper Nile State say the national government should protect their rights. The children say parental negligence and early marriage, gender inequalities are some of the issues facing children across the country. Mamer Abraham Kwart reports from Malakal.
Yesterday was the International Day of the African Child. It commemorates June 16, 1976, the day children in Soweto, South Africa, staged a protest demanding improved education and their rights to be taught in their own language. This day was initiated by the Organization of African Unity, or OAU, to advocate for improved education for African children. 16-year-old Alat Arop, a high school student at Vision Academy, says poverty forces parents to violate the rights of girls in Upper Nile State. She says girls drop out of school because they are forced to marry at a tender age.
Poverty is causing a lot of things in our community, especially this forced and early marriage. When there's poverty at home, all your parents may think that if my child can marry, maybe we can get that wealth from her husband. They may force their daughter to get married in the age that even the daughter is still young. This affects us because when a girl is forced to get married, she may not go back to school.
Awan Loingarang, another high school student at Vision Academy, says many children in the state are exposed to child labor. Garang says boys and girls should have equal rights to education.
Children actually are facing a lot of challenges. One of them is child labor. You can see a child carrying something which is not even his or her level. And also sexual exploitation. Parents actually didn't allow ladies to study, but ladies stay at home that they should help mothers by doing family activities, but that is not right for parents to do that. We are all equal, us boys and ladies.
He says parents should be educated about the importance of child rights and should encourage their children to study.
Awareness should be created to our parents so that they should be told not to actually do this to us. Children are suffering, and for this also, children need to be encouraged, because if they are not encouraged, some of them may get dramatized.
Tut Poshluak, Director for Child Protection at Upper Nile State's Ministry of Gender, Child and Social Welfare, says child protection is a challenge across South Sudan.
Most of the kids, they are not going to school because they love their loved ones, and that is why now most of them drop out from school. Some of the children now fail to go to school because they are orphans. We have a lot of children who are now in the street because of the economic issues.
Luak says the ministry is liaising with the courts and state police to end forced and early marriages. For VOA News, I am Amer Abramquad, reporting from Malakal, Upper Nile State.
From Malakal, we move to Kakuma refugee camp, where the Kenyan police have imposed a curfew at Kaloboi refugee camp in Kakuma. Intercommunal violence erupted at Kaloboi refugee camp on Wednesday between two communities from Ethiopia, forcing some refugees to flee to the bush. I spoke to one of the refugees a few minutes ago, and she told me that the situation in the camp is tense.
The group attack us, they are newer from South Sudan. Some of them, they are from Ethiopia, so they're getting together. There is no reason, we don't know. We don't know the reason. They just come attack us only. They attack the target annual community.
And what are the camp administration, the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, doing to diffuse the tension?
So I think the problem was the Kenya government. They are also on the Mandaman and Kenya and town. There is a problem there for them as government issue. But as from here, yeah, they brought some the police here, but the police is running up from the camp. The Kaloboi, we are living now, the refugees, the condition of the police is very small. Even now, right now, there were place now we are standing now with the children together. There's not the police. It is us now, we are standing alone here now.
How many refugees from Ethiopia are there?
The refugees from Ethiopia now. The Anuak, who was here, and the refugees in Kaloboi, they cannot reach even 3,000 people. They are very small. Maybe it will be 2,000 something, only Anuak. But others, not in Ethiopia, and in Somali, and Oromo, and Amara, we are some in distance. They are in Kakuma. They are in Kakuma from us, Kaloboi, from Kakuma here. They are distant from us. But from Somali now, who are here with us together, the Ethiopians, they just stay with their own. They don't have a problem with this Nuer. The Nuer did not attack Somali. They attack only Anuak here who was living in Kaloboi.
Let me understand this from you. The two communities are all from Ethiopia. Why are you fighting among yourselves?
The problem now, I think this problem now from Nuer attacking us, there's some problem going on in Ethiopian ground there in Gambela. In Gambela, so, Anuak and Nuer are fighting. The Nuer, so, they want Anuak to move away from their land. Homeland in Ethiopia.
So this problem started in Gambela, yeah. Ethiopia, between the two communities. Then it's now spreading to refugee camps.
Yes, now is starting from the refugees camp, because there are many Ethiopian, there is seven camp in Ethiopian refugees camp from South Sudan. So those people, they say they cannot be calling their from refugees from South Sudan. They want land, Ethiopian land, Gambela. They need land to be them.
Talk to me about the condition of women and children in the refugee camp where you are in the backdrop of this fighting.
There is no food, because from us, you did finger, then you get 1,000 for a month for yourself to be taken away, and the card and put it in the market, you get 1,000. But this money will not reach for us, the cash money. It's not cash money at Wuhan. You just wait for 40 days to get 1,000 for one each person. So now the money is not enough from the refugees. Children, they die with the anger, even the whole people now in the refugees camp, Colombia. We are very tired of this thing.
I saw a statement from the police yesterday, the Kenyan police. They have imposed a curfew in the camp, and you're telling me the number of the police are few, but the police is doing something to diffuse attention.
But the time I was there, the people who was attacked on that place, I'm the person who was there, neighborhood 41. Even the dead body of the people, when the police come at the money, they want to take it again. Another attacker come, they take the body around 11 p.m. in the morning time. They're supposed to take the body in the morning time, but there's no way, because these people, they are very many.
And how many people were killed in these attacks?
The people who were killed now, the people, a lot of people, but some people I don't know. But from us, our side now, the Gambela was on you. One person was dead, four people there was injured, very injured. Now there are others less, they were taken to the network now, and the hospital, and that one, some of the one is the main, the Kakuma mission. But other people in situation that then they are told now they were thinking there's no way they can go to hospital, because the hospital from us here, there's distance from us here. They cannot move from there. You alone, you will be back again, you will be killed by anyone. So we don't have to get money to take taxi or the pick to go to hospital. This is not a problem. People now were thinking some of them they are told.
That's Achan Goj, an Ethiopian refugee, speaking to me from Kaleboi refugee camp in Kakuma. This program made several attempts to speak to the Kenyan police and UNHCR officials to get to the bottom of the story, but our calls were not picked. U.S. presidential candidate Joe Biden and Donald Trump face off in their first debate of this election cycle tonight. From Atlanta, VOA Carla Yu tells us what is expected.
Joe Biden entered their first debate of this campaign with each telling voters that electing their opponent would be catastrophic. Trump says Biden is ruining the country.
Inflation is raging. Crime is out of control. Europe is in chaos. The Middle East is exploding. Iran is emboldened. China is on the march. And this horrible, horrible president is dragging us toward World War III.
Biden says Trump would take the country backwards.
All progress, all freedom, all opportunities at risk. Trump is trying to make the country forget just how dark and unsettling things were when he was president. But we'll never forget.
Public opinion polling shows this is a close race, raising the stakes for this debate, says Northeastern University journalism professor Alan Schroeder.
Well, I think that puts sort of equal pressure on both of the candidates, both in terms of the opportunity the debate presents to them, but also the risks.
This debate is unique in featuring both a sitting president and a former president, says University of Pennsylvania communications professor Kathleen Hall Jamieson.
So the public is more knowledgeable about both of these candidates as individuals, more likely to know about their temperament, their habits of mind, their disposition. But this year, because of the age of both, there is a need, even if you think you know a lot about both of the candidates, and you're more likely to this year, for you to be able to say, are they mentally acute enough to be president of the United States and mentally stable enough to be president of the United States?
Political debates are about message and moments, says political analyst Brett O'Donnell.
You've got to drive a message consistently across the debate, but then you want to have a couple of moments in the debate that are the shiny object, so to speak, that the press will pay attention to and that allow you to exercise competitive advantage.
This will be the earliest presidential debate in U.S. history, with neither Trump nor Biden officially nominated as his party's candidate. There will be no opening statements Thursday night. Both candidates will have their microphones muted when it's not their turn to speak. Kelly Yu, VOA News, Atlanta.
That wraps up our show for today, Thursday, June 27. On behalf of our team in the studio here, I'm your host, John Tanza. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another